Facing the rising sun of a
Welcome
new
back. This is Mark Steiner. And we begin our program today talking about the murders, the execution-style murders, of three young people in North Carolina. Yusor Muhammad, Dia Shadi Barakat, and Razan Muhammad Abu Zahir. And there were three young Muslim students who were students at the University of North Carolina who were shot in the head by a man who was an active atheist, but like an anti-Christian, anti-Muslim atheist. And look at his Facebook, you see more there. We'll talk about all that. But we're going to talk about Islamophobia in our country and why this has become such a debate over with many people saying this was not an act of racism, this is not an act of Islamophobia. It was just a man fighting over a parking space. And that does happen, but we'll run into all this with our guests. We have in the studio with us Imam Earl Al-Amin, the Imam of the Muslim Community Cultural Center here in Baltimore City. Imam, always good to have you with us.
Thank you very much for inviting me, Mark.
And in studio also is the Reverend Dr. Heber Brown, community activist, pastor of the Pleasant Hope Baptist Church, and executive director of Orita's Cross Freedom School. Good to have you with us.
Thanks, Mark.
Reverend Brown, always.
Good to be here.
Zainab Chowdhury joins us, the Maryland Outreach Manager for the Council on American-Islamic Relations. And Zainab, welcome back. Good to have you with us as well.
Thank you for having me, Mark.
And you all can join us here, 410-319-8888. Please send emails to us with your thoughts at talk@steinershow.org. Get onto our Facebook pages, which I will check now since I didn't yesterday, but will. You can also tweet us at Mark Steiner, 410-319-8888. So this act, you know, when you first hear about it, the first thing I thought about was that if a Muslim man in America had taken the lives of, let's say, three white students at the University of North Carolina, the first thing we would think was hate crime, Muslim terrorist cell, they're out to kill us. But you see a white man kill three Muslim students in a university in the head over a parking space, allegedly. We question what was the real motivation.
Well, I think, Mark,
Earl,
it's very interesting. It's a whole lot of variables here. You would have heard about it much sooner, first and foremost.
Yeah, it did take a while, didn't it?
It seemed like it took a long time, and social media was the one that really prompted the traditional media to really disseminate the information. Number one. Number two, I think what is important to understand is that this is being fueled by traditional media and two things that are very important to understand, ignorance and arrogance in the American and the European society. We know that by the year 2040 that Europe will be brown and America will be brown. And that's very, very important to understand. And that I think that this helps to fuel that. People ignorant of in the most diverse society ever in human history, America, that people are still ignorant to the point of not understanding, be it Islam, Buddhism, Hinduism, Taoism, all of these different faith traditions, that people still want to hold on to 1950s America. It's very ironic, and America is a changed place right now. The other variable, in my opinion, is the idea and the concept of the image of the divine. The image of the divine. We see for so many years the idea that Jesus is portrayed as a European. And Heber will tell you, I know he's fought strongly to remove that racial image. So all of those things are impacting people who are ignorant and still who are arrogant.
And before I turn to Heber Brown to jump into this, I want to ask Zainab a question. I know that as soon as this particular incident occurred, the police immediately released a statement saying it wasn't a hate crime, it was just a dispute over a parking space. And that your organization, the Council on American Islamic Relations, immediately asked the police to look into the possibility that this was a hate crime.
That's correct, Mark. There's a couple different issues here. First of all, nobody kills anybody execution style, point blank range, especially three people over a parking spot. I mean, I think that it's really important to look at the broader context that this individual, Craig Hicks, who is now awaiting trial, this is a person who went on social media and has a history of making anti-Islamic, anti-religion rants on social media. According to the victim's families, he also had threatened the couple who he later killed. Previously, he came to their door, he flashed his gun, he threatened them. And the wife of the man who was killed, his wife Yasser, she told her family multiple times that she did not feel safe. She felt threatened. She could tell that he didn't like them. That was the kind of vibe that she got. And so it's really disturbing that the media would try to portray it as anything other than a hate crime when there are so many indicators that lead us to believe that it quite possibly was a hate crime.
And Heber, I'd really like you to weigh in on this. One of the reasons I wanted you here today, because this is an issue that you feel deeply about and think and ponder a lot.
Mm. Yeah, I think similar to what's been said, I mean, all three of you have touched on, I think, very important issues. You, Mark, as you alluded to the role, and Imam Earl as well, alluded to the role of traditional corporate media. It's very important. And Zainab, she talks about the context piece. It is the context. It is about the three precious and beautiful sisters and brother who were killed. But it's also about the context that helps to allow for the violence enacted against Muslim sisters and brothers, or anyone who is considered an other by those who are privileged in society in different ways. And so I'm thankful to be here because of the importance of these types of issues. I'm also thankful as a pastor of a Christian church to be here because I think the Christian church as well bears some responsibility in helping to create a context, a climate that allows for the othering of people who do not share the Christian faith. And so even in that silence or even indifference, we as those who follow the way of Jesus, as disciples of Christ, we have some atoning to do and some responsibility to this. And so that's why I'm also just so grateful to be at the table to speak, not as an expert on Islam and not as a Muslim, but as a Christian pastor. We should be at the table saying, you know what, this is wrong. Islamophobia is wrong, and not only is it wrong, we're going to be at the table to do something to help change the climate and challenge the popular narratives of Islam as well.
Yes.
As well,
absolutely.
Because Islam the presentation of Islam in popular society has been politicized to such a degree that there are underlying motives and justifications that are furthered. You talk about ISIL. You know, you talk about the Islamic. How many times have we heard on the news Islamic militants have done this or that? How would our perception change about Christianity if nightly on the U.S. news we heard Christian militants bombed a town in Iraq today? 15 families were killed. Christian militants walked into a neighborhood and raped boys and girls. How if Christianity was framed in the same way in the popular public psyche that Islam is framed, then I think we would feel more deeply how wrong this is.
Yeah, you know, it's ironic that you say that, Heber, because just a report was issued about 4,000 there were between 1870 and 1870 and 1950, if I'm not mistaken. 4,000 men, women, and children of color, African Americans, were lynched in America in that span of time. So, you know, this whole idea, we have to be real careful with language. I think maybe I've used the word Islamophobia 5 times, but there's a power that defines language, and so they've used language to help to fuel this also, Mark. Mm. So, I mean, it's very important that we understand how people use language. Words make people, and it's very disconcerting, as Heber has alluded to. I've never heard Christian phobia. I've never heard Judaism phobia, but I've heard Islam phobia. Mm. So it's how the language is used and how the language is used to make people less than other or to ostracize them outside of the mainstream. You Islam is in the mainstream of American society, whether folks like it or not.
Absolutely.
I mean, there are two U.S. congressmen that are Muslims. So they're mayors. They're people that work in government. They're people that work every day in the world of business and culture. So, I mean,
one of the things that struck me about this, and I spent some time looking at Greg Hicks's Facebook page early this morning. Not a wonderful way to start your day, but I started my day looking at his Facebook page.
Ooh.
But one of the things that struck me, and Zainab, I'd like you to jump in on this first and all of us come in, is that right now when you look at Europe, there is a huge movement in Europe against immigration especially from Islam, countries that were of Muslim countries,
right,
and Muslims into Europe. And many of the – so when I looked at his page, here's a man who was warning us against on his pages about the dangers of climate change and our species killing ourselves. Here's a man who talked about his support for gay and lesbian rights in America and talking about the dangers of any theistic ideology destroying democracy. And I'm obviously one of those people who supports gay and lesbian rights completely. I have made that clear from my entire 20-odd years on the air. And about climate change, it's all very real. I woke up this morning and we were talking about the gray skies. And those gray skies we have right now because we're warming the oceans and they're hitting the cold air. We're destroying the planet. That's why we have gray skies. Having said all that, it reminds me, Zainab, of the socially liberal but racist right-wing movements that are taking place throughout Europe against Muslims, and there's a connection to me here, and it's this one of the contradictions of the West that we're facing. Zainab? Is Zainab still with us? See if there's something wrong with the phone connection here.
I think I laid it out. When you grow up in mythology. And you understand that what has been purported out there, you see this image of the so-called divine, and the image does not look like you. So it has in 1980, the Association of Black Psychologists issued a proclamation saying that psychologically it was damaging to people of color, but it was also damaging to white people. That this idea and this concept has had such a profound impact that it made some feel that they were superior, and it made some feel that they were inferior. And so I think this is in many instances what fuels a lot of this. People who are ignorant to other faith traditions, but that because of that ignorance and that arrogance, as I said before, it fuels this superiority. And this fear that someone is coming in and is going to take this ideal away. I mean, even the governor of Louisiana has weighed in with his talking about we're not going to have these people. We're going to send Islam back to where it came from. Well, Islam was here before they even founded the United States of America. Islam came here in the 1500s.
In chains.
In chains. And before that, Estevanico was here. And he was a navigator. So Islam has been here, you see.
So, I'm sorry, Zainab, I'm glad you're back with us. Pick up on that point also, the connection I was making between the very complex thing between Europe with these kind of socially liberal but racist groups that are fighting against immigration in Europe, I think are directly connected to the consciousness of this man who assassinated these three young Muslim people.
Right. And no, Mark, that's a really important point. I think that it's important to look at the fact that, for example, you had mentioned earlier, I could hear you a little bit, your voice faded in and out. I apologize for that. You had mentioned that there is this rise of Islamophobia even amongst socialists and liberals. And I think media has a huge role to play in that. I think that especially the advent of groups like ISIS and Boko Haram, and one of the other panelists mentioned earlier that, you know, every time we turn on the news, we hear, Islamic extremists or Islamic terrorists. Had Craig Hicks been Muslim, we have to wonder how would this story have been painted, or how would it have been reported. The crime occurred on Tuesday around 5 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time. It took over 15 hours for a major media outlet to pick up the story and report it. Had the roles been reversed and had the perpetrator been Christian or had he been, I mean, had he been Muslim and the victims been Christian or some other faith, we have to wonder how that would have been framed. Even now in most of mainstream media, you won't hear Craig Hicks being referred to as a terrorist. You'll hear that he's being referred to as a man who may be mentally disturbed. And there's almost a sense that if you're Muslim, you're not allowed to be mentally disturbed. You're not allowed to, you don't have that that luxury of mm-hmm. being anything except a terrorist if you engage in these kind of horrific acts. And unfortunately, a large part of it is because whenever we listen to all of the you know, what we see in television media, mainstream media especially, we hear this negative connotation of Islam and Muslims. And one of the things we've tried to do by framing this story in the media, we've tried to frame it in a way such that it highlights the legacy of the three victims. I mean, these were people who were loved not only by their family and friends, but the larger community. I mean, to just kind of bring back to what a huge, tremendous loss this is for the entire American Muslim community and the global community. I mean, this young man, Dia, he was a dental student. He was bright. He was loving. He was engaging. He tried to promote tolerance between individuals of different faiths, especially Jews and Muslims. He raised money for refugees in Syria. He was engaged in charitable work to improve the condition of society around him. So it's really a tremendous loss to all of us. And it's really sad that it took so long for us to hear about this in mainstream media. I think that the media is catching up now, but it's definitely that rhetoric that's out there about Muslims being evil and Islam being this vile religion that has helped to create this anti-Muslim sentiment, unfortunately.
I think it's also important, and I read many of the wonderful things that, all three of those who were killed were involved in helping to advance and further the community and just were great blessings to society as a whole. I think it's also important, though, that we remember that if they were three college dropouts who posted nasty pictures on Instagram every day, who cussed out their parents, who ran red lights and didn't pay their taxes, this still would be a issue that we would need to consider. Mm-hmm. I think sometimes we feel pressure, and I'm speaking from a black identity context right now, we feel pressure to prove ourselves. See, no, these are not some of the bad black people. No, these were ones who did all the things that, you know, appease and align with the values that are in cooperation with Western white identity and relation. And so I think that while all those things are important and wonderful in terms of what they did, I think it's also important for us to recognize, and particularly I'm sitting here recognizing that if these were the type of Muslims that I wouldn't want to spend a whole lot of time with, weren't nice to me, shot nasty glances at me, their lives still matter. Why? For me, because I believe their lives matter to the Most High, the Divine.
Right.
And seeing that of God in everybody is something that I think we have struggled with over the years, seeing that of God, whether Christian, Muslim, whether Jewish, whether, African traditional spiritual systems, what have you, seeing that of God in each other helps get us closer. It has socio-political impact when we see that of God in each other.
Yeah, you know, one of the things that...
Let me just interrupt you. We're going to take a very quick break and come back and let you jump in. Also go to the phones at 410-319-8888. Please join us for your thoughts. Merrick Moyes, you're the first caller up. We're going to come to your call as we come back and hear your thoughts. We're going to break here. I Put a Spell on You by Screamin' Jay Hawkins, who passed away on this day in 2000.
Because you're mine. Stop the things you do.
I wonder who. Who wrote the book of love? Tell me, tell me, tell me, who wrote the book of love? I've got to know the answer. Was it someone from above?
I wonder, wonder, who
wrote the book of love?
Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner, and that is The Monotones. That's The Book of Love written in 1958. We could use a bit more love in the society. That's what we're talking about right now with our three guests, Imam Earl Amin, Zainab Chowdhury, and the Reverend Dr. Heber Brown, as we look at what happened in the killing of three young Muslims in North Carolina 2 days ago that is now just hitting the news. And we wanted to make sure we had this conversation with all of you. I do want to get to the phones. Did you have a quick thought, Earl, before
we... I think in reference to what was being said, I think it's very important for us as we move forward as the human beings that we put our humanity before our ethnicity. When people put their ethnicity before their humanity, that's when they get in trouble. But when we see each other as human beings first and foremost, that all of us have a human soul, then we move forward in a different direction. But when we put our ethnicity before our humanity, that's when we start having problems.
Let me go to the phones here at 410-319-8888 and on line one, Merrick Moyes. Welcome to the program.
Good morning. I really believe that this was a hate crime. There's absolutely no doubt in my mind. And, you know, if you look at the history of North Carolina, singularly, we do know about the lynchings. And I just see this as a continuation of terroristic violence against people of color. And I don't believe that this was just about a parking space. And I think that it's interesting that this comes amidst rampant violence against people of color in this nation, particularly state-sponsored violence, and individuals acting out on those impulses. And I feel like part of this is this conversation that Americans refuse to have around our history of racial terrorism sponsored in part by Christian churches. We can't move forward in this country unless we start talking about it and we heal from it. But every time people are sweeping this under the rug or othering others and trumpeting Christianity as some, and I'm saying this as an old Catholic priest, and trumpeting Christianity as this faith without violence,
right.
And know that the history says otherwise, we'll always fall back into that. I'm hoping for not only reconciliation, but that we actually start having honest conversations on a nationwide level around this. Thank you.
Thank you. And Zainab, let me turn to you before we go to the next caller and your thoughts on that and how, especially your organization, the Council on American Islamic Relations, is addressing that.
Right. So this caller raised excellent points. North Carolina is a state where historically people of color have been marginalized. We know that there's a large group of the KKK and other white supremacist groups who operate out of North Carolina. And it's interesting because we have to, if we look at the broader picture, it's really important to also understand the role that, for example, state legislators play in creating a climate that creates hostility and fear towards Muslims and towards Islam. In 2013, the state Senate passed an anti-Sharia bill that helped to create more animosity towards Muslims. And for anybody who's familiar with anti-Sharia bills and what they connotate,
right.
It really helps to kind of create the sentiment that Muslims are the other, that, you know, they're not welcome here. They're not worthy of the same kind of treatment that, you know, ordinary Americans or non-Muslim Americans would be worthy of. And unfortunately, we have to wonder what role that has played in creating like this kind of sense that, you know, it's okay to hate Muslims. It's okay to feel threatened or feel afraid of them and want to evict them from, quote unquote, our country when Muslims, ironically, are, you know, they've, like one of the panelists mentioned, Muslims have been part of the country since the very beginning.
And as I always like to say, there are more Muslims in America today than there are Episcopalians.
They certainly are.
410-319-8888. Darren in Baltimore, you're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call. I'd like to expand the envelope a little. There's an old saying that clarity begins at home and charity begins at home. Here in Baltimore, we did have an occasion, unfortunately, where a young man killed two young men over a parking spot. But yet I heard the young lady say that nobody would ever do such a thing. Nobody's called that a hate crime, but it was a black man that killed two other black men. Then we had less than 2 weeks before that, two young men, black men, killed in a pizza parlor not too far from Imam Earl Alameen's Islamic Center there on North Avenue in a Muslim-owned pizza shop. And haven't heard a lot of talk and discussion about that. As it relates to what happened in North Carolina, Mr. Hicks, of course, said he was a devout atheist. So I think those are some serious questions we have to look at. We got to ask, where's the video footage? If there's video footage of that complex, and ask some questions and get the facts. Because it's my belief, as I expand this envelope, just like we saw with Ferguson, a lot of it was being funded and backed straight out of the White House. Washington Times said it was being funded, $33 million from George Soros. I believe more of these type of incidences will be something that's again.
Well, I don't understand, Darren, before you hang up, what is being funded?
In terms of these types of incidents to create the balkanization of America or to create basically a class of civilization right within the confines of this country right now. It's interesting, this incident happened the day after the members of the Muslim Brotherhood met with President Obama at the White House.
The Muslim Brotherhood didn't meet with Darren. That wasn't the Muslim Brotherhood that met with the president.
I think this kind of exemplifies how mainstream the public's perception has been impacted by media reports. First of all, just to touch back on what this caller was saying initially about how there have been killings over parking spots in Baltimore City and in other parts of the state, it's important to look at the broader context, as I mentioned earlier. So there was a history of animosity towards this couple in the past, as I'd mentioned. The wife of the victim, his wife Yusser, she had mentioned multiple times to her family that, you know, she didn't feel comfortable. The man had made, Mr. Hicks had made racist remarks. She didn't feel comfortable being their neighbor, being his neighbor because of the way that he would treat her. They actually had reported incidents, previous incidents to the police that were under investigation when this incident happened. So this wasn't just a random attack that occurred out of nowhere that doesn't have like a broader, you know, more broader context. And just to respond to the second point about the fact that this happened after the Muslim Brotherhood, quote unquote, was invited to the White House, I think that this statement itself, like this broad brush categorization of the American Muslim leadership that was invited after many, many years of seeking this kind of meeting with the White House, the fact that, you know, now they're being categorized as a Muslim Brotherhood, I mean, I think it shows that there is this very large, significant alienation of American Muslim society within the broader context of the nation. I mean, the fact that, you know, these are individuals who were at the White House representing approximately 7 million people in the United States who historically have been marginalized, who have been demonized, who have been victimized on significantly large-scale post 9/11 America. I mean, the vast majority of these people are peaceful, law-abiding citizens of America. You know, we love our country, we pay taxes, and yet we continue to be treated like second-class citizens. I mean, the blanket surveillance that occurs in Muslim communities all across the nation, it's unconscionable. And the fact that, you know, we are being made to be treated differently because of the fact that we're Muslim, I think it requires us to have some honest, frank conversations amongst ourselves at what the deeper-rooted issues are here.
Gentlemen, you want to jump in on this particular point?
No, I don't think I can elaborate anymore. I would just say that it wasn't the Muslim Brotherhood, because if with that language, here we're back to language again. They were leadership amongst several organizations that represent Muslims in America that met with President Obama. So I just don't want to say Muslim Brotherhood, because right. In my mind, when you say Muslim Brotherhood, and in many other people's minds, when you say Muslim Brotherhood, that goes right straight to Egypt.
Right.
You see?
410-319-8888. Kuya, you're on the air.
Yes, good afternoon. Good morning to everybody.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Yes,
good
morning.
I better let me see. It seems to me that
Kuya, we're having a really hard time hearing it with the phone connection. Try that again.
Yes, I know the NSC is looking at me.
Okay.
Probably looking at all of us, but anyway.
Yeah.
Yes. Now, brother, I would like to say this. Nothing human is alien to me. Baba Karl Marx. And I believe Karl Marx is hitting on something which is essential. Why Karl Marx made this statement? Because he's looking at human beings as human beings, as a human family. But at the same time, he's analyzing it within the class structure of society. And it seems to me that Yes, I agree with the sister who said the vast majority of Muslims are peaceful. However, there are segments of the Muslims call themselves jihadists. They're acting on behalf of agents of imperialism, such as ISIL or ISIS, Al-Qaeda, and whatnot. And they are putting the vast majority of Muslims in a situation where imperialism look at Muslims as enemies of the human race. And it seems to me we have to put it in context in terms of the vast majority of Islams, I believe, are peaceful. But when you have a state like Saudi Arabia and Jordan and other places, for decades they support the terrorism of Palestinian people. It seems to me we have to put it in context.
Okay, let me just go back to our panel on Q, because we have a little bit of time left. And I appreciate what you're saying. Heber, let me bring you back into the conversation. It's been a few minutes. And just what Kuyu was saying, I mean, there is a complexity there, because we also, when we talk about anybody who's a jihadist and a Muslim, I always keep my response usually is that we can look at every religion on the planet that have kind of fundamentalist outlooks or that are equally as dangerous on this planet.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, that's the kind of statement, Mark, that got President Obama some heat as well, mm-hmm. That he made earlier this month about the very same thing. As the caller was speaking, I was thinking about Christian militants who put scriptures from the gospel on guns and bullets just a few years ago as they were invading Iraq, just a handful of years ago. As they were invading Iraq, there was a company that was putting scriptures from the gospels on the guns and bullets to give to the soldiers to go over there. And so I think, as you allude to, Mark, every religion has people who interpret their faith in such a way that violates what I believe to be the principal essence of the wonderful faith traditions that span the globe. And so I think it is, in my estimation, a disservice to Jesus. It's a disservice to the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him. It's a disservice to those who follow Buddhism, Hinduism. It's a disservice to the best essence of the spiritual traditions to take those who have extremist violent views and interpret them and then paint the whole religion as if that is what that is. I would not be sitting in this chair right now if some Christian terrorists and militants did not enslave my ancestors, put them on slave ships called Jesus, Mary, and Joseph, and bring them across the Atlantic Ocean. It was Christian militants that justified the enslavement of my ancestors. I just want us to be very careful to take big, broad brushes and paint whole religions, because, as you say, Mark, we can point at everybody and say there's some issues there.
And it's very, you know, the Ku Klux Klan was started by a Methodist Christian minister. So, I mean, these things, I'm back to ignorance and arrogance. And we have to be cognizant of a great man once said, nothing in the world is more dangerous than sincere ignorance and conscientious stupidity. Martin Luther King. That's what he said. So the enemy of the human being is always ignorance. That's what the enemy of the human being. When people become enlightened, then you see the society become enlightened. But when people are ignorant, Mark, and they're ignorant of themselves and they're ignorant of their own humanity, that's when we have a problem.
And let me get a final thought here from Zainab. I didn't want to leave this conversation without Zainab having a final thought. Zainab?
I totally agree with what the Reverend was saying and what you were saying earlier, Mark. I think that, you know, we can find extremist ideologies in all religions. I think that we also have to examine our own policies and see what role they play in creating and fostering anti-American sentiment in other parts of the world. It's funny because, you know, as Americans, or interesting, not funny, that we as Americans, we kind of forget to see, or sometimes forget that there's billions of other people in the world who are impacted by our policies. And this in no way, shape, or form ever justifies terror. And what ISIS is doing, what Boko Haram is doing, what Al-Qaeda is doing is never justifiable. It's not justifiable by religion. It's not justifiable by humanity, by the principles of our humanity. But we have to be able to have frank conversations and examine how drone strikes being waged in Yemen and in Pakistan and different parts of the world that are
that are taking the lives of innocent people, how they're helping to create and foster anti-Muslim sentiment or anti-American sentiment, how having prison facilities like Guantanamo and Abu Ghraib in Iraq that resulted in gross human rights abuses, how that's helped to stir support for these kind of regimes who like to use terror to counteract against what they deem as American policies. And we can only do that if we work together and if we have these kind of frank, honest conversations with each other.
And I just a closing thought here for all as we move into our next conversation is that this man was a professed atheist, and as someone who has been more involved in the secular world than probably anybody else on the panel here.
I don't know about that, Mark.
No. But I'm just saying that what he represents is that world of kind of shrill, closed-minded atheism that does not think about humanity, and how many people who have been humanitarians have also been atheists. And he doesn't. And so there's also a danger in here that religious communities will think that this, because he was an atheist, this represents atheism, or people who are dumb believers or agnostics, and it does not. And I just think that, you know, when you hear the Bill Maher's of the world screaming about yes. Islam and more, and that just that is kind of a danger sign, and what this guy represents is. So I just wanted to put that out there as well, as we think about this and who he was and who he represented. And I would just remember, I want to close this particular conversation today, saying three names. Yusr Muhammad, Diashadi Barakat, Razan Muhammad Abu Salha. I'm going to thank, it's remember the names, remember these lovely human beings whose lives were taken.
May God have mercy on their soul and grant them the highest stations in paradise.
Amen.
Amen.
Imam Erl Amin, Zainab Chowdhury, the Reverend Dr. Eber Brown, thank the three of you so much for being here with this particular conversation.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me.
Don't go away. We're going to come right back. Heber Brown remains with us. We're going to look at what's happening in the Christian church here in Baltimore in terms of activism. Stay with us.
Every day is an endless stream of cigarettes and magazines.